Perik Lamed, Pasuk Aleph. The Pasuk says, Vayibavo David v'anash of Tziklag. So David and his men came to the city of Tziklag by Yom HaShlishi on the third day that they had walked from the camp where they were fighting against the Jews, where obviously they didn't fight, right, with the rest of the Plishtim. So the third day they got to Tziklag. V'amaleki pashul negev v'el Tziklag. The Amalekim had spread their raid to the south and to Tziklag itself. Yaakov was Tziklag. They destroyed Tziklag. They set it on fire. They set the entire city on fire. Afterward, they captured the women Asherba, Mikatum Ve'agado, from small until big. V'olimisu ish. They did not kill anyone. There were no dead bodies on the ground. V'ainhagu V'yochel Darkum. They carried them off. They went on their way itself. Now, we already talked about the Amalekim before. The Amalekim were a very strange bunch of people. This is not, as we said before, the Amalekim that were living, that Shaul HaMelech had already taken care of, except for obviously Agag, the king of Amalek. And then there were other people that lived, but they weren't exactly Amalek. It'll come. But they weren't exactly like Amalek. All they were doing here is they wanted to take advantage of what was happening by the times of the Jews. Once they said there's something around here, they decided they were going to take advantage of the weakness that the Jews had had. We're in Perek Lamed and Shmuel Aleph, Pasuk Beis. But the Amalekim knew that David Melch had staged his attacks and when it ended up fighting him and everything. So they completely destroyed Tziklag, and they wanted to make sure that they knew, that the Jews knew, that they were coming out after them. So David and his men came to the city, but the whole city was burned in fire. Nishayim, Benayim, Nosayim, Nishbu, their sons, their daughters, right, and all their wives were taken capture. They lifted up their voices, they started crying. They couldn't stop crying. The two wives of David were captured. Achinoam Yisrael Zamigail Ashes Navala Karmeli. Both Achinoam and Ashes Navala Karmeli itself. The people didn't know what to do with themselves. All they could feel was like their families had been violated, and they felt like something had been stolen from them. The first thing is, this is an unbelievable bracha, because as much as they were looking at it like, oh my gosh, look at what just happened to us, these people were taken. Number one, none of them were killed. There was nobody dead, which means there was still a chance of getting them back alive. But number two, they shouldn't have been there. They were supposed to be fighting against the Jews along with the Plishtim at that time. They were sent back, and because they were sent back, they were able to check this out. And look over here, it says clearly, Shtei Nishei David, they were the wives of David. Although they didn't know it at the time, the fact that it's called the wives of David means they weren't violated yet. They weren't taken by anybody else, so they knew things were still going to be okay. Pasuk Vav. Batetzer LeDavid Ma'od, Kamra Am L'Sakla. So David HaMelech was unbelievably distressed because the people wanted to stone him. Kimara Nefesh Kalam Asher, Ish Al Banav Al Benosav. So each man was so pained over their sons and their daughters. Notice it doesn't say their wives, but it says their sons and their daughters. They were all bitter. David HaMelech strengthened himself in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is the greatness of David HaMelech and why he's the king of Israel. Because when everything looked the bleakest that it's ever been, he's kicked out of Klal Yisrael. He knows the Plishtim are fighting against. He sees that his wives are captured and everybody there is captured and everybody wants to kill him. David HaMelech strengthens himself in a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He's an inspiration. The worst of the worst is happening to him right now, and he's still able to pick himself up, and he's able to go on. The Mitzudah says that the people were angry at David HaMelech. They looked over at David HaMelech and said, you should never have told us to go with the Plishtim. Why didn't you tell us to stay home? If we would have stayed home, we would have killed all the Amalekim that came up over here. Alternatively, it could be they gave up completely. They just said, you know what? We just can't handle this anymore. Like, they gave up out of grief. They were just like, we don't want to live anymore, and that can't be there. The Kli Yakar says, clearly, the way that David Melch was looking, everybody looked at him, and David Melch looked like he was fine. Everybody else is crying their eyes out, and David was upset, but he didn't seem to empathize with their pain. He was looking at them like, look, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. And that's the last thing you want to hear. You ever go to a Shiva house, somebody goes up to the person who's sitting Shiva and says, this is clearly God's plan? What kind of a line is that? What kind of a dumb person says something like that? You don't want to do something like that. So David HaMelech is sitting there and he's like, yeah, everything's okay. Don't worry about anything whatsoever. And everybody else is looking at him like, what, are you kidding me? Why are you not upset? Why are you not sad? I mean, you lost both of your wives over here. Clearly, there's something else over here. David's men were confident over here that there was something that was going to happen. They didn't know what happened to the children. Here's what they were thinking. They were thinking that their wives were violated. The wives were embarrassed. They had left, but they weren't taken by the Amalekim. The Amalekim grabbed the sons and daughters and were going to sell them into slavery somewhere else, and they'd never be able to find them again. That's what they were the most worried about. They sat there and they said, we don't know what to do. So how did David HaMelech get them back? By Yischazik Bashem Alkav. He strengthened them by saying, guys, it's a miracle that we're here. If we're here, clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be here. And if Hashem wants us to be here, we're going to be able to chase after them. We'll be able to get everybody. Let's not worry about anything at all. So David HaMelech said to of Yosef the Kohen, Ben Achimelech, the son of Achimelech, Hagisha Nili Ephod, bring me the ephod with the choshen. By Yagish of Yosef the ephod, he brought the ephod to David. He shall David Hashem Lemor. He asked the Urim Tumim, saying, Erdov Achoy Agudazah, Hasigenu, should I chase after these people? Do you think I'm going to reach them? Vyomelo Radof. And the message back from the Urim Tumim, welcome Dovi, was, Radof, chase after them. Kiaseg Tasig, you will reach them. Hatzil Tatzil, you are going to be able to get them, and you won't have to worry about anything whatsoever. It's so funny. David Melech was still weak, because even if he wasn't crying as much as everybody else, he was still unbelievably upset. He had to have Avyasser come to him instead of him going to Avyasser. You don't normally call a Kohen like that. You don't call the Kohen to you. You want to ask the Urim Tumim something, you go to the Urim Tumim. But here he had Avyasser sent to him over here. There's another thing over here. Normally the Urim Tumim does not answer two questions at once. David HaMelech asks two questions here. Should I go after them? Will I catch up to them? And he was answered only one. Radof, the first time, and then Kiaseg Tasig, the second time. The Urim Tumim did not answer both of them all at once. It was one after the other one right over here. Some say that it was all one question. It's should I chase after them? Is it worth it? Because will I be able to catch them? Pasuk test. Vayel David hu v'sheish meos ish shirito. So David went. Him and the 600 men that were with him. Vayavo ad nachal abesor. They came to the wadi of Besor. A nachal, if you'll remember, is a river that dries up in the summer and is there during the winter. So it's a river during the winter. In the summer, it just becomes in a valley. Vanusarim amadu. Everybody with him remained behind. There were many people that remained behind because they said, we have to wait behind. We don't know exactly where they went. Let's try another way. Vayir David Huvar Ish. So David went ahead with 400 men. 200 men waited behind, and Chazal are telling us, or the Pasuk is telling us, they were exhausted. They couldn't take it anymore. They were so upset that they couldn't handle going any further over there. Some say that David Melech purposely left them. He said, you're not needed. You can stay here. You take care of our stuff over here. Others say, no, they were just too weak. They were so upset they couldn't deal it whatsoever. There were daxes, they were guarding supplies, and it was like that. The Malbim goes on and says there might have been other people involved. Although David HaMelech had 600 men that we know about, there may have been other men that we don't know about, and they came around, they helped as well. So there were 600, but there were 400 other people. Okay. Vayitzu ish mitzri basadeh. They found an Egyptian man in the fields. Vayikol sol David. They brought him over to David. Vayitno lelechem. They gave him some bread. Vayochal he ate. Vayashku mayim. And they gave him a little bit of water to drink. Vayitno lepelech develo. They gave him a little bit of a cake of figs. Shnei tzimukim, two raisins. The raisins back then, not like, you know, two tiny little raisins. The raisins were bigger than that. Right? And they did that. But Yochal, he ate. And his spirit came back to him. He hadn't eaten bread or drunk water for 3 days and three nights. He was with the Amaleki party, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already sent the refuah. Look, this guy had been sitting there for 3 days and three nights, and he was from the Amaleki party, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu had sent the refuah before they even knew that Siklag was raided. So it already happened before anything else happened. They knew about this only beforehand. Come, Shalom, we'll grab this right here. But that's that. So they said, what do we do over here? Oh, they gave him specifically, by the way, sugar things, meaning bread and water to go through. But when a person has bulmos, which means a disease in which you can't handle it and things are going on inside you, you need to eat something as soon as you can with sugar inside it. Call it almost like diabetes. When a person has diabetes, you need to raise your blood sugar level. That's what this guy had. It could be that bulmos has something to do with diabetes, but it's something like that. Who do you belong to, and from where do you come? I'm an Egyptian lad. I'm a slave to a certain Amaleki guy. My master left me here because I've been sick for 3 days. Pretty crazy, right? The Amalekim would throw away their slaves that were sick. They didn't want to have to deal with them, so they just threw them away completely. So we had just spread our army against the south by the Krasi. And Siklag we burned in a fire. I was just there with them. Can you bring me to where this troop is right now? Will you tell me where this troop is? Swear to me by your God that you won't kill me. And you won't give me to the hands of my master. And then I'll bring you to this Geduda. If you're willing to do that, then I'll bring you down to the Geduda. So they brought him down. They were spread out throughout the entire land. Eating, drinking, and partying. Throughout all the spoils. I take him from the land of the Lishon of Eretz Yehuda, from the land of Yehuda right now. They were so confident, they weren't even hiding. They weren't going any faster because they knew that David and the rest of the men had gone to war with the Plishtim against Bnei Yehuda. They had no doubt that they had weeks before David HaMelech was going to come back. A war doesn't take a day. So they knew it was going to be weeks before David HaMelech found out about everything. So they said, we might as well party now. So they took all the women that they found, and their plan was right there after they took food and drink and everything like that. They were not even fortified at all. They were planning on ravaging the woman there and having that happen right then, right at the moment that David HaMelech and the rest of the people were there. Again, the Hashkacha Pratis is amazing. Vayakim David, Meha Neshev Dad Ha'ereth. David HaMelech destroyed them. Now, here's a little bit of a Shiloh. We don't know exactly what it means. We know Neshev means twilight, but there are two twilights. There's twilight in the morning and twilight in the evening. We don't know if this means from morning until evening, from evening until the next evening, or the entire time. The Macharos on the next day. Below Nimla Mayam Ish, not one of them escaped. All of the Amalekim came. Arba Meos Ish Narash Rachval Gmalam Yanusa, except for 400 young men that rode on their camels and ran away as quickly as they possibly could. So again, we don't know if this is a 12-hour time, a 24-hour time, or even a 36-hour time, right? Where they went from, let's say, from morning, twilight of the morning, all the way till the evening of the next day. But during this time altogether, they were able to take care of everybody that was there. It could be they even waited a little bit to launch a surprise attack against them at a time when they couldn't see very well as they were going through over here. Now, Chazal tells us an unbelievable thing. Any time you fight against a Malik, you cannot fight without a member of the tribe of Yosef. If one of Yosef's kids are not involved, you will never win the fight against the Amalek.
From Yosef and Esav?
Correct. But when everybody bowed in front of Esav, Yaakov Avinu bowed, and all the Shvatim bowed, even Rachel Imenu bowed, and in her stomach at the time was Binyamin. So even Binyamin bowed. But Yosef did not bow. Yosef stood in front of his mother. He was the only person not to bow. Which means that Yosef has a power over Amalek that nobody else has. Yoshua is from Shevet Ephraim, from Yosef, which is why he was sent to go fight Amalek later on. Later on, we're going to see, we saw Gidon. Gidon fought against Midian and Amalek. Gidon is from Shevet Yosef. Binyamin was only successful because there were people from Shevet Yosef in their army when they fought against Amalek. And so too over here, Chazal tell us that there were people in David HaMelech's army that were from Shevet Menasheh, and therefore he was able to fight against Amalek and destroy these Amalekim.
Wasn't Ephraim like annihilated after leaving Egypt too early?
Ephraim lost 30,000 men. But there were, they still had 58,000 by the time they came to Eretz Yisrael. So that was still okay.
Shaul was from Binyamin.
But his army still had Yosef within it. Okay. And that's the reason why they were okay. Anytime you fight Amalek, you still have it. Even by the times of later on, obviously, when you have Mordechai HaTzadik fighting against. So Mordechai HaTzadik still needed somebody from Yosef to be there. He has to be involved in order for it to be. Why 400 men? Why did 400 Amalekim escape? When Esav went to fight Yaakov, how many men did he bring with him? 400 men. Those 400 men slowly but surely slipped away so they wouldn't have to fight Yaakov. In the schus of those 400 men that slipped away and wouldn't fight Yaakov, 400 men from Esav were able to survive this battle. They were able to survive and they were able to get out. Vayatzel David is called Shadlachu Amalek. David HaMelech was able to save everything that Amalek had taken. Vashtena Shavitzel David, he was able to take his two wives. Chazal tells us from right here, nobody had touched them. Nobody had touched his wives. They were not touched whatsoever. There was nothing missing. Out of everything that was taken from them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had returned everything to David. Now granted, their city was on fire. They lost all their houses. That was happening. But all the wealth that they had was taken by Amalek, and they had taken it with, so they lost nothing. They weren't returning to Tziklag anyway. They weren't planning on going back to Tziklag. That was the first thing before anything else. So again, the first thing is, David saved everything that Amalek took and then took care of his wives. He wanted to show that everything that belonged to everything else was his, was chashuv to him, and that's that. There's a great story that they say where a guy came to a Rebbe once. He was in a forest. I don't know which Rebbe this is. It's one of those I think is, eponymous. It could be anybody, right? So where it goes through. But this guy was in a forest and he had all his stuff, his wares and everything that he had by his donkeys and whatever, he was carrying everything. And then he's like, you know what, I'm done with this. Why shouldn't I just go to my Rebbe today? He left all of his stuff in the forest and went to his Rebbe's house, left everything there, and went to his Rebbe's house and made it there right before Shabbos. Right before Shabbos, he runs into his Rebbe's room and he said, Rebbe, I'm here to spend Shabbos with you. And he's like, where did you come from? He said, I came from a forest. I left all my stuff there and then I came to you. And the Rebbe looks at him and he's like, well, you want me to give you money now? Like, you just lost all your stuff to come to me for Shabbos. What kind of a fool does that? You want me to pay for you? And he calls over to the Hasidim. He's like, you see this fool over here? This guy left all of his stuff over there so he can become poor. He said, I have to take care of him the rest of his life. And the guy felt like a piece of garbage. That night, Friday night, at the Tish, the Rebbe is in the middle of a Dvar Torah and says, and that's why that guy over there is an idiot, because he left all of his stuff over there in the middle of the forest, right, and came over here. That fool thinks that I'm going to take care of him. Next morning, Shacharis, he gives his Dvar Torah. In the middle of the Dvar Torah, he says, and that fool over there thinks that I'm going to be able to take care of him. I'm not going to be able to take care of him. That guy's over there. Mincha, Shalosh Shodis, he gets up and he says the same thing. Darshans on that guy, the fool over there, who nobody's... This is the guy. How could he have done such a thing? So one of his sons goes up to him and says, Rebbe, I don't understand. What are you going to do with the Gemara that says that if you embarrass somebody publicly, you have no chelik in Olam Haba? You just embarrass that guy publicly four times. You're not going to have a chelik in Olam Haba. What's the Rebbe going to do about that? So he said back, there was a gezerah in Shemayim that this guy should lose all of his money. He was going to lose all of his money. And we know that somebody who loses all of their money is considered like they're a dead person. So I embarrassed him in order for him to be like he's dead. Because when you're embarrassed and you're white in the face, it's like you're dead. So I gave him his gezerah of Misa. I let him die. And now all this stuff will be there. And it's true. When the guy went back, all of this stuff was still sitting there. The donkeys, everything was just sitting there. So I said to him, Rebbe, that's fine. But that means you're still not getting a chilek in Olam Haba because you still embarrassed him publicly. So he said back, I'd rather give up all of my chilek in Olam Haba for one yid's Olam Haza. For one yid's Olam Haza. It's the same thing over here. David HaMelech is willing to take back, right over here, what he's saying is, Yatza David's kosher lachu HaMelech. He's first worrying about everybody else over here. Then he goes to find his wives, and he says, where's my wives? Oh, Achinoam, you made it? Abigail, you made it? Baruch Hashem, everything's okay. That's the first thing he does more than anything else, and then he worries about everything else. David's two wives were permitted to him. Halachically speaking, there's a big shaila. Can a melech be together with his wife if his wife had been taken by somebody else? We all know that a Kohen, if a Kohen's wife was taken by somebody else forcibly, even if she was forced by Ones, nonetheless, he is not allowed to be married to her. Does that apply by a king as well? It didn't matter, because both wives were able to testify on each other that they had not been touched, and because they were able to testify on each other they were not touched, they have nemanus. And they were able to be taken back by David Melech without a problem. So it was mutter no matter what.
Yeah, I remember that issue with Sarah.
Only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu paskened it. I have the greatest idea of all time about Sarah Imenu that went through with Avimelech. I'm talking about this tomorrow night. I have the craziest idea of all time. I don't know if it's true or not. But I think what happened with Avimelech was exactly that. It was a sota, so to speak. You know how, like, Chana said, I can force you, God, to give me a child. Because we know what happens by a sota. If Reuven accuses his wife, and that wife goes into yichud, and she's innocent, then she's going to have a baby. V'nixav, she's innocent. V'nizra zara, she ends up having a baby. So Chana said, I can force my husband to be makanami, be in stira, go into yichud with that guy, not be together with him, and then automatically I'm going to have a baby. So the Ma'ari asked the question. He says, why didn't Sari Minu do that? Sari Minu should have said, like, I'm going to do that. So in the end, she did. She probably, when she was being taken by Avimelech, she probably turned to Avram Avinu and said, quick, be makanami. Tell me that I can't be in the same room as Avimelech. So Avram said, you can't be in the same room as Avimelech. Then she was in the room with Avimelech, and she's innocent. She came out, she had a baby 9.5 months later. That's why, by the way, people think that Avimelech was the father of Yitzchak. Because it happened 9.5 months later, right after that. But that might be the shot as to why it happened. All right, Pasuk Chav, Vayikach David Kol Tzom VaBakar Shnahagalut Me'amikneh. David HaMelech took all the sheep and the cattle. They led them in front of the other herd, right? Vayomru Zeh Shlal David. And they said, this is David's. David's Shlal. This is his stuff that he gets to keep over here. And that's the truth. When it comes down to something like this, this is 100% mutter. If somebody has given up hope on something that used to belong to them, but they've given up hope on it, they don't think they're getting it back at all. They think it's gone. 100% you're allowed to take it. It's considered hafker. That's called 100% Hefker. Somebody drops something into, let's say, the Niagara Falls, and it goes over the fall itself. That guy, there's no chance he's getting it back. No chance. If you find it on the bottom of the river, even if the guy is standing there screaming, it's mine, it's mine, it's 100% mine, it doesn't matter. He gave up hope. That's yush. You 100% can take it. You want to be a jerk, you can take it and keep it for yourself. You want to give it back, you're the nice guy. But that this is 100% mutter. So they said, this is all David's. David gets to keep it. He never gave up hope. We all gave up hope. Every single one of us gave up hope, but David thought we were going to be able to get everything back. Everything belongs to David HaMelech itself. And David HaMelech, the nice guy that he was, David went back to the 200 men that had given up hope, that didn't want to go past the river, and they left them by Nachal Besor. They came out to greet David, to greet the people, so he brought them over, and they asked them for peace over here. They came out to David. It sounds like they were hiding. Maybe they were looking for stragglers or whatever it is. All the men that went with David, they were evil, and they were lawless. And they said, listen, you guys didn't come with us to fight this war. They don't get anything back. We're not giving anything back. David HaMelech, we don't want to give anything to these guys. They stayed home. They could have fought with us. They didn't. That's their problem. Let them take their wives and kids and go home, but they're not getting any of the money whatsoever. Again, we did paskin this law. But Yomer David, David HaMelech said, Lo sasu kenechoy. Don't do this, my brothers. Isher nasan Hashem lanu. Who gave us and kept us, and he gave the troops that came upon us, he put them in our hands. So how in the world can we go ahead and divide it up between ourselves when HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this massive miracle over here? So no, if we were victorious through our own prowess, through our own courage, through the fact that we fought and we clearly won this war, then I hear you. Then maybe you could say those 200 didn't fight. But the Allah, this doesn't make any sense. HaKadosh Baruch Hu guided us to the right place. We found the right people. This is clearly miraculous. How can we not give it back? But even more so, halakhically, this is absolutely wrong. Avram Avinu, when he came back from the war against Sodom, what happened? He met the king of Sodom, and the king of Sodom said, Harechush kachla, give me the people, you get to keep all the money. And Avram Avinu said, I'm not taking any money from you, right? I'm not taking any michut vad srochnal. I'm not taking any strings, I don't want to take any shoelaces, I'm not taking anything from you. But the young lads who were watching over my stuff, you got to give them money. Aner Eshkol and Mamre, watch my stuff. They didn't fight in the war. They just watched the stuff. They get equal portions of anything that you would have given me. I can't take their stuff away. You're not giving me anything, but you got to give them. So Chazal say from that point on, if you stay home from war for whatever reason, you still get the spoils as if you went to war. Just because you didn't fight that battle, but you were watching over something, you're the medic, or you're something else involved, you still count as if you're in the war itself. And therefore, they should be equal in the spoils themselves. When later on we say that Chazal had this idea that every time you went to war, you have 1,000 people going to war, you have another 1,000 people learning at the same time for their sake. I remember when I was in the Mir Yeshiva, when the second Intifada started, I think it was in 2002, but when the second Intifada started, I remember they went around the yeshiva, around the mirror, and they gave out names. Everybody got a name of a soldier that was fighting in Lebanon, and they handed it over to you. You had it, and while you were learning, you were supposed to think of that person the whole time. I never found out what happened. I never wanted to know, to be honest with you, what ended up happening to my soldier, but they all gave it out in that way. So that way, in this way, it should be that they get both. I should share the spoils with them. They didn't have spoils there, but in theory, that should be there. It says, Pasuk of Dalit. Mish Malachim Ledover. Who's listening to you about this? Ki hechelik hayori lemochama kechelik yoshev al kelim yachtav yachloku. The portion that goes for those people that go down to war, and the portion for those that watch over the kelim, they get to split it together. From that day on, they made an official law among the Jews, Adiyom Azeh, that still applies over there as well. So it's interesting. A chok normally is something that has no reason. A mishpat is a law that has a reason. Either this is a chok or a mishpat. You wouldn't say it's a chok and mishpat, but the pshat is, it was a chok. It didn't make any sense that somebody sitting on the kalim should be equal to the guy fighting in battle. But they made it into a mishpat. He explained a reason. David HaMelech said to them, look, they're fighting. They would fight, but we don't need them. Or we need somebody to watch over the kalim. That's the job that they're doing. it became a mishpat instead of something different. Okay, the Abarbanel says this thing we said about Avram Vino. Vayoba David at Tziklag. David came back to Tziklag. Vayishalach me'ashalol zikne Yehuda l'reyehu. So he sent from the spoils to the people of Yehuda down south, to all the friends that they had down there. Lamor, hinei lechem brachem yishalol evi Hashem. Look, we've got presents for you from the spoils of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Look, we got all this back. Again, David could have kept everything. His men could have kept everything. But this is a huge honor and a massive Kiddush Hashem. He wanted to publicize the miracle that had happened, and he sent the spoils back and said, I know you guys have given up hope on ever getting this all back, but it's yours. Take it back. Lasher Bebeis El, Lasher Beramot Negev, Lasher Beatir. All those cities, Lasher Be'aroer, Lasher Be'sifmos, Lasher Be'ashtemoa, Lasher Berachol, Lasher Be'aroer Yachma'el, Lasher Be'aroer Kini, Lasher Be'chorma, Lasher Be'chor Hashan, Lasher Be'asoch, Lasher Be'chevron, Lekom, all the places they went to, they went and they said, is any of this yours? Is any of this yours from your house? If it is, come and take it. We're not taking anything that's not ours. If you see something that's yours, come and take it. Which is an unbelievable chesed that David Melech and his men did. But meanwhile, there is a war going on. The war is happening at the same time when David Melech was together with those people. Pasuk Aleph and Perek Lamed Aleph. Plishin milchamim b'Yisrael. The Plishin waged war against the Jews. Ve'anusu anshe Yisrael. The men of Yisrael ran mipnei Plishin because of those Plishin. Ve'yiplu chalolim b'har Gilboa. Many corpses died on top of Har Gilboa. The Jews had the high land. Normally, when you have the high ground, you're the ones who win the war, because you're shooting down. The other people have to climb up and at the same time try to shoot up. You're going against gravity. Typically speaking, if you had the high ground, you would always win. The Plishtim were so numerous, and there were so many people that ran away, that the people that were in Har Gilboa were severely outnumbered by the Plishtim that were coming from all sides, so the high ground meant nothing to them. The Abarbanel says over here, Tchilas Nefila Nisa. The beginning of any end of any war is when Nisa, when they're running away. Once again, we're learning a huge schus for Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech was told, if you remember, from the Balas Ov the day before, he was told he's going to die in this war. And he didn't run away. He did not run away. He continued fighting even when he knew that his troops had deserted him and he's by himself and he had a way of escaping. He's the king. He can do whatever he wants. The king wants to get away, they can get him away. But absolutely, they were out completely. It seems like Bnei Yisrael were completely dispirited. Maybe Shaul HaMelech didn't get them rallied for this war itself. Maybe they knew that David HaMelech was completely gone and David HaMelech had been their general for years. Whatever the reason was, Shaul HaMelech was not able to keep them into it. I don't know where Avner went. Avner should have been here. Avner is the general of Shaul HaMelech's army. I don't know where Amasa went. Amasa should have been there. He's the other general of Shaul HaMelech's army. I have no idea where they went. It seems that even they deserted Shaul HaMelech, which is strange. Generals do not desert, especially like that. I'm sorry? Yeah, but yes, it could be. But would you, as Avner, knowing your king is going to die, would you leave him alone? I'm not sure he should have done that. That also seems a little bit strange. Somehow, it could be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu let it be in their heads. They knew they were all going to die, so they said, let's just run. Maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed them to think that way. But Yibiku Plishtim. Yeah.
If they know they're going to die, then fight until they die.
Yeah, that's what I would think. I would think that exactly. So maybe it's that. They knew that Shaul was going to die, so they stayed away from Shaul. Whether it was conscious or subconscious, they were just like, you know
they
what?
They all knew he was a dead man walking anyway. So
Avner knew. For sure, because he was there when he heard the message. And Amasa knew, because Amasa was there as well. I don't know. It is strange. It definitely is strange. And why? The whole thing is strange. But Yidbiku Plishim is Shaul Vezbanav. So the Plishim surrounded Shaul and his sons. Remember, there were three sons that he had with him in war. Vayaku Plishim is Yehona's son. Vesavinadav is Malkishua b'nei Shaul. He killed all three. They killed all three. Yehonasan, Avinadav, and Malkishua, the sons of Shaul. Shaul HaMelech saw his sons die. Right there was one of the greatest punishments that Shaul HaMelech ever had. He loved his children. Loved his children. Nobody wants to see their children die in front of their eyes. And he watched the three sons, his three biggest sons, die in the midst of this war. Then the war became very, very heavy. by Shaul Amel, but Yimsa Uam Morim, Anashim Bakashas. So the people with swords couldn't get to him. Shaul was killing one man after the other with his sword. Shaul Amel, remember, was a head taller than everybody else in his generation. He's this huge guy. Even though the Plishtim had people like Goliath, as we saw before, there were giants that were there. Shaul was knocking down everyone, and nobody could get him in hand-to-hand combat. So they had no choice. They were shooting him from the outside with arrows from the below, trying to shoot him, trying to get him. By Yachoma Od Me'amorim, and he was sickened. He was completely terrified of the archers themselves. The Radak, by the way, says there is a fourth son of Shaul that's not mentioned here. Ish Boshas, who becomes the king of Klal Yisrael after Shaul Melech dies. Ish Boshas is not mentioned here. The Radak says he never participated in any battles. He was not a warrior. There were people like that, like Domitian and Titus. We all know who Titus is. He destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. Domitian was the other son of Vespasian. He never fought in any wars. He was a poet. So he would stay home, and eventually he became emperor. He poisoned his brother Titus. Our Gemara says that he had the bird in his head anyway, that little bug that was killing him, right? And Domitian ended up becoming. So there are people like that. Ishbosheth wasn't like that. The Abarbanel says Ishbosheth was in the war, and Avner grabbed him on his shoulders and brought him out. So that explains where Avner went. Avner had taken Ishbosheth to save him, right, and to bring him out to be able to escape with him over there. Now, what does it mean by Yochel? He was terrified. Here's what he was terrified of. He was not scared of dying. He knew he was going to die, and he understood it. He was terrified that he was going to be tortured by the Plishtim. And Chazal say, the one thing that you're allowed to commit suicide for is if you're afraid that if you don't die, you're going to be tortured, then you're allowed to do anything you can. It says, Vayomer Shaul Lenose Caleb. So Shaul turned to his Nose Caleb, the person who was carrying his stuff. Shlof kar bechav v'dakreini ba. Take out your sword and pierce me with it. I'm dying anyway. I have all the arrows in me. I want to die quicker before the Plishtim get to me, because if the Plishtim get to me, they're going to torture me. Take out your sword, pierce me with it. Penya vo arela ma'ela v'dakaruni v'is alubi. I'm afraid that these Plishtim are going to find me, and they're going to play with my body. V'lo ava nose kalev. But the nose kalev, the guy who was carrying his stuff, said, absolutely not. Ki yari ma'od, he was so afraid. He said, I can't touch the king. I'm not touching my king. Ve'ikach shol zachar v'ipo'olah. So Shaul took the sword himself and threw himself upon the sword. Threw himself upon the sword itself. Shaul, the Abarbanel says, again, you're allowed to commit suicide in this type of a situation. It's from the word ach. Ach as dimchem l'nafsho seichem edrosh. Your blood by your own soul I will search. Meaning, if you commit suicide, Hashem says you will have no chelik in olam haba. Ach. But there are exceptions, and this was an exception to the rule. When a person feels they're going to be tortured, then it's going to be okay. The word ach also might include Shaul alone. It's only for a person like Shaul, where a king, etc., and something like that. Chazal say this was tshuva for what he had done for Novir HaKohanim. He had killed Novir HaKohanim. His tshuva was to kill himself at what happened over here, and that's what happened. I'm sorry?
Why didn't he kill himself the night before? When he was gonna die?
You can't do it then, because he knew. You're not allowed to commit suicide before anything happens. But once he knows he's dying, and he was hit by the archers already. But that's not enough. Not before the time comes. The time had come at this point, and he said, okay, now it's going to be right over here. Because Shaul HaMelech also was given a chelek in Olam Haba. The fact that he died with this, Chazal tells us he was still allowed to go to Olam Haba. He was allowed to have this over there.
Well, Hashem made a deal with it.
I'm sorry?
Hashem made a deal with it. He said, you need to kill yourself or you're not getting anything.
That seems to be, from what it was told. Yeah, from what he was told, it seems like it was exactly that. He was either do this or not. This once happened before, if you remember, by Avimelech. Avimelech, the worst shofate in shoftim history, right? Although, by the way, I did see a parish, and I don't remember who it was, that Avimelech never worshipped Avodah Zarah. Avimelech was a murderer, and he killed tons of people, but he never worshipped Avodah Zarah. And that's why he was killing everybody else, because they were committing Avodah Zarah. He said, Gidon's sons are doing Avodah Zarah, so he killed his 70 brothers. Right? And then he said, like, Shechem is doing Avodah Zarah, so he killed all of Shechem. That's what he's doing. He fought against Baal Bris. Some say, okay, but he definitely wasn't the greatest of guys. Avimelech, at the end of his life, if you remember, there was a tower that he was sieging against, and a woman pushed out a plach rechev, which is like this spindle, out the window, and it nailed Avimelech in the head and crushed him in the head. He was still alive. And he turned to his sword bearer and he said, kill me. I don't want to be known as being killed by a woman. And the guy was like, with pleasure, sir. and immediately killed him. Like, no question whatsoever. And the guy did it, and he was, like, perfectly fine. Here, Shaul HaMelech was respected. Shaul HaMelech had respect of his guy, of his shield bearer. The shield bearer said, I'm not killing you. I'm not touching you. I'm not going anywhere near you. Vayar Nosei Kelev Kimei Shaul. The Nosei Kelev saw that Shaul was dead. Vayipol Gamu Al Charbo V'Yamaso Imo. He fell on his own sword and died with him. Now Chazal say, was he allowed to do that? Shaul HaMelech was allowed to. Was the shield bearer allowed to do that? Chazal say, no. He does not get the same Olam Haba. However, they darshan Bayamas Imo. He died with him. He's with him in Olam Haba as well. So there is another opinion. Bayamas Shaul Zubanov and Osei Kalev, Gam Kol Anashim Bayamahu Yachtov, Shaul, his three sons, right, the Nosi Kalim, as well as all of his men, they all died together on that day. Yiron Sheisol Shav Evar Emek, the men of Yisrael that were on the other side of the valley, they saw it. Veshav Evar Yard on the other side of the Jordan River. Ki Nasu An Sheisol, that all the men of war were running away. Chimes Shaul Banav, that Shaul and his sons had died. Vayazu Asa Arim, they forsook their cities. Vayanusan, they ran. Vayavol Pelishim Vayishav Ahen, and the Pelishim came and lived in this area. They were all right over there. This is unfortunate. What's going to be over here? We're going to see that this is not the end of death in Shaul HaMelech's family. Ish-Boshes is going to be assassinated. We're going to see there are sons of Shaul who are going to be killed by the Givonim later on. It's not going to be easy for them.
His additional sons as well?
We only know of one additional son. We know four altogether. Four altogether. So unfortunately, that's we only know of them, and that's that. Mita Kenegamita, though, everybody agrees that the murders that were happening were because of Novir Kwanim. He had killed Novir Kwanim and all the Kwanim there. Everything's going to happen to him here. Pasachas. Vayimilachos was the next of Yevo Pelishim Lafashes Echalolim. The Pelishim didn't even know Shaul HaMelech was dead. They came to strip the corpses. Vayimtsu Shaul Vesholshes Banav Noflim Bahari Gilboa. They found Shaul and his three sons dead on Har Gilboa. They had no idea. They had absolutely no idea they had killed Shaul. They couldn't imagine that the king was still alive, the king was there. But they found him. By Yichusu as Rosh, they cut off his head. By Afshitu as Caleb, and they took off all of his Caleb, all of his weaponry. By Yishalko Baritz Plishim, and they sent the body throughout the land of Plishim, Saviv, all around, Levasir Benatz Beyam as Aum, to tell the news over in their idol worship houses and all the people. By Yasimu as Caleb, as Ashtaros. They put his Caleb in the house of Ashtaros. Remember, there were two gods. Baal was the human male symbol. Ashtaros was the female symbol. Baal was for Arias for the women, and Ashtaros was for Arias for the men. But that's what it was. That's a By Asimos Kilvas Base Ashtaros, Ves Givioso in his body, Tokabachomas Base Shane. They stuck it in the wall of Base Shan. That's what they did over there. Clearly, guys, they didn't even know he was dead. But they cut off his head, making it seem like they had killed him in battle. And they went around, one guy was holding the head of Shaul, saying, look what I was able to do. I was able to kill the king of Israel, going around telling everybody.
Shaul did everything that he did in order to sanctify God. Why was his body...
Well, we'll see. The Radak says that the miracle was that he was hung on nails, right, outside the walls of Beis Shan. No animals came to get his body. And then came Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayishmoy Lav Yoshve Yavesh Gilad. The people of Yavesh Gilad, they heard Esther Asu Pelishim Shaul, everything the Pelishim did to Shaul. Now Yavesh Gilad owes everything to Shaul HaMelech. In the beginning of Shaul HaMelech's reign, the people of Yavesh Gilad were approached by Nachash, the king of Ammon. Nachash, the king of Ammon, went up to them and said, we're going to kill you. Either you give us your right eye, which Chazal say means give us the Sefer Torah so that we can burn it. Either give us that Sefer Torah, or else we're going to kill you and everything with you. We'll do everything there. They called out to Shaul HaMelech and said, Shaul, can you please save us? And Shaul HaMelech said, 100%, he owed Yavesh Gilad. Why did he owe Yavesh Gilad from before? Yavesh Gilad were the people who didn't go to war against Pelegish Begiva. Because they didn't go to war, they were all killed, and their daughters were given to Shevet Binyamin. If you'll remember, Shevet Binyamin and Pelegish Begiva were decimated. 600 people were left. Shaul HaMelech was one of those 600 people of Binyamin that remained after Pelegish Begiva. One of them ended up marrying the Yavesh Gilad women. So Shaul owed Yavesh Gilad. So then he fought for Yavesh Gilad. He fought against Ammon, destroyed the Ammonim, and fought for Yavesh Gilad to be able to get them back. Now Yavesh Gilad comes back. They heard what happened to Shaul HaMelech. They said, we owe him. Vayakumu kol Yishchayel, all the men of war got up. Vayilchu kol Alayla, they went all night long. Vayichu es Gvias Shaul, they took the body of Shaul HaMelech, Ves Gvios Banav, and all the bodies of his sons, Mechomas Beis Shan, from the wall of Beis Shan. Vayavo Yavesh, and they came to Yavesh, Vayisrafu Osam Sham. And they burned them there. Now, clearly not the bodies. You can't burn human bodies. That's not what they did. There was a tradition to light a fire and to take all the stuff that belonged to the king and light it on fire so that no one else can use it. Since you're not allowed to use the scepter of the king and the certain things that the kings have, so they took all the stuff that belonged to Shaul, they burned a fire out of respect for the king itself. That's where that idea comes from. By the pagans, they used to burn the bodies as well as everything else. That's what they did. Here, they did stuff like that. Those bones of Shaul HaMelech were buried in Yavesh Gilad, and David later rewards them for this action, and Shaul HaMelech is still buried today in what the area of Yavesh Gilad is. It's somewhere south
without
in Eretz Yisrael. I'm sorry?
Without a head.
They did take the head as well, although it doesn't say it over here. They also grabbed the head from the house of vital worship, grabbed the head as well, and buried it in that area over there. It's possible that they purposely burnt the fire because there was an odor of decay coming from the corpses. We don't know when this war was fought, but it's likely it happened in the summer. If it happened in the summer, even one day being out in the open will cause the bodies to bloat and rot. So by that time, the smell was so horrific, they burned part of the fat of the body so that it no longer would be so smelly, and then they buried it. It could be that they did that over there, right? Maybe they buried the flesh or something like that. The Malbim says they did a bit of embalming. The burning was like embalming. It kept the inside somewhat intact because the bodies were so ravaged by the Plishtim. It was able to do something. So they purposely burnt it in order to keep the bodies together, and they were able to do that. Others say they mamish burned the bodies. Why did they mamish burn the bodies? No. They were worried the Plishtim would come and get them, take them out of their graves, and bring it back. If there was an official kever for Shaul HaMelech and his sons, they were afraid the Plishtim at some point would rule and be able to take them back. So they said, let's get rid of the bodies so that nothing will happen, leaving just some of the bones, and that's that. Pasuk Yud Gimel. They took their bones, and that's why we say maybe the flesh was burned, etc., buried it under the tree, B'Yavesha, in Yavesh Gilev, Yatsumu Shivas Yamim, and they fast for 7 days. This is something that David HaMelech did when Avner died. They fasted 7 days in commemoration of the 7 days that Nachash HaAmoni had given them to give up their Torah or to lose their lives, and Shaul HaMelech fought for them. They fasted for 7 days after that. Obviously, they ate at night. They were able to eat at night, and they were able to do stuff like that, and they gathered everything together. David, we'll see, did not treat Shaul HaMelech. He treated Shaul HaMelech as his father-in-law, which he truly was. He did not treat him like garbage whatsoever. And when he heard that everything that happened, he's going to cry like crazy. We're also going to see that there's another version of this story. The Amaleki. There was a Ger Amaleki that came to David HaMelech and told him, I killed Shaul. Who said that Shaul turned to me, that apparently when he jumped on the sword, he did not die. The shield bearer thought he died. But he did not die yet. He was dying. And while he was dying, a Ger HaMaleki was looking around, going around, probably stealing stuff. And as he did that, he saw Shaul that was standing by the sword itself, right? And Shaul HaMelech said, kill me because I'm dying. And he did exactly that. And we'll see. That's going to be a little bit of a steer to what happens over here. We're going to have to see whether that's real or not. We got 3 minutes. I'm going to tell you over a story that somebody said regarding these Amalekim now that we go through it. Is there such a thing as a Ger HaMaleki? I won't be able to say it next week anyway when we start Shmuel Beis. Is there such a thing as a Ger HaMaleki? Does such a thing exist? Do you have an Amaleki guy that can become a Ger? We know that B'nai Haman lamdu Torah B'nai Brak, right? The children of Haman eventually learned Torah B'nai Brak. We don't know who they were. We don't know how they are. We do know one person. In Baba Basra, Chaf Beis Yemen Aleph, there was a person by the name of Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas. Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas is a great, great, great grandson of Haman. We don't know how many generations down. He was a master teacher, the Gemara says. The Gemara says that he was still thinking of his Talmidim years after he had them in his Shirim. Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas is a master teacher, and he has a son, Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, Rav Yehuda, who's mentioned throughout the Gemara. Rav Yehuda Bereid Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, who's from Haman. So we see that there's such a concept as a Ger Amaleki. But can you be a Ger as an Amaleki? Is that real, that a person can be Megayer? Is that something you can do? If a guy comes along and says he's Amaleki. So Rabbi First told over a story about Amalekim. He told me the story. He said he knows the person involved. He said he believes, he verified the story. He said it's 100% true. There was a guy who was driving in his car down in Brooklyn, and he was driving down one of the streets, normal speed, everything. A guy went in between two cars, ran into the street, an older man, and the guy couldn't stop the car in time. He hit the guy. The guy flew a few feet. He died. So the guy got out of his car, quickly ran over. There were enough witnesses there. Everybody saw what happened. They saw that it wasn't the guy's fault, the driver's fault. The cops came, but they said, it's not your fault. So they didn't give him any ticket or anything like that, and they just sent him home. But the guy felt like garbage. He just killed a person. So he decided he was going to go to Gedolim. So he went to Rapam, he went to Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky at the time. I don't know if Rav Schneer or Rav Aaron Cutler. Each one of them said, you know, what can you do? You did what you could. There's nothing you can do. He said, but I want to know what I can do as a kapara. What can I do? They said, go to Eretz Yisrael. So he went to Eretz Yisrael, right? And he went to a bunch of Gedolim. Then he went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Sat down with Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky told him, Macho Timcha Zecher Amalek. You should surely erase the memory of Amalek. When he asked Rav Chaim, what does that mean? Rav Chaim was silent, absolutely silent. He didn't know what that meant. So he went to other people. They said, nobody knows what that means. Absolutely nothing. This guy moved back to New York. He didn't feel any better of anything. But he said, you know what? Every time he got home, he had to go down that street. So every time he got home, he had PTSD. He's walking, he's driving down the street that he had killed somebody. So he couldn't deal with it anymore. He said to his wife, we got to move. But if you live in Brooklyn, where are you moving to? Brooklyn. So he moved to another block, like six blocks away, right? So, but in Brooklyn, just he doesn't have to go down the street anymore. So he moved to another house that was down whatever it was, and it turned out, you're already getting the gist of the story, the guy who had owned the house was being sold by his kids because he had just died, right? And his kids were selling the house for him. So they got into the house, and only after they had bought the house and moved their stuff in did they realize that the person who had owned the house was the guy that he had killed. It was the same guy that he had killed. So they were shocked. They went up to check out the rest of the house, and in the attic there was something in the corner where they were supposed to clear out the whole house. They called up the kids and they said, listen, you left a trunk up here in the attic. They said, we didn't notice it. Listen, open it up, and whatever it is, you know, we'll decide what to do with it when you open it up. So he got a locksmith, because it was locked, got a locksmith to come. The locksmith opened up the lock, they opened through. Inside the trunk was the guy's SS uniform. He was a Nazi, and in there, this part Riffer said he couldn't verify. But the story goes that in there he had a list of everyone that he had killed, and on that list was this guy's father and mother. That was inside there. That part he couldn't verify. He couldn't verify that, but he verified every other part of the story. It's a real story. It really happened. But not too long ago, it happened, and he told me the year. I forgot what it was, 1970-something. But it's a pretty crazy story. All right, we'll stop with that, guys. Have a great rest.